I am excited.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Pre-Accident Podcast. I'm your painfully obvious host for this day's podcast, and I'm sure glad you're here. It's always fun to talk to you, and hope everything's going great. It's a little nutty as autumns in the United States and North America, and always a great time to be around, so that's good. Hey, today's podcast is really good. You're going to like it a lot, a whole lot. It features Daniel Hammerdahl, and you either may know him or may not know him, but either way, you'll want to know him because he has a really cool job and does really interesting things. But he also started a website that I hope you know of, and if not, it's a big introduction for you, called safetydifferently.com. Now, Daniel, and I think Ron Gann is also kind of a co-editor, edits this amazing website that's really a voice, a place to sort of cooperatively build. Did that come out all right? Yeah, I think it did. Some idea exchange and a place for information to happen. But I like the website because it's a balance of academic and kind of applied and artistic. And it's all around this sort of new view, this systems understanding of how reliability functions. It's a great website. And you'll see why, because Daniel is a great guy. And this is a really, really, really fun podcast. You're going to enjoy it a lot. Listen carefully, because his Skype was kind of monkeying around a little bit. He drops out and sort of pauses. But I fixed almost all those that I could. But sometimes Skype leaves you hanging. But it's a really good way to interview somebody who, for instance, is in Australia if you're in Santa Fe, New Mexico, sitting on your couch. I give Skype my highest marks for that. Other than that, things are grand and good, and the podcast is just humming along, baby, humming along. Thanks in great part to you. Because of you and all that you've done and all that you listen and telling all your friends, and keep all that up because that's good, our numbers have gotten really high. And I think it's a good thing. I mean, it can't be a bad thing. But I think what it really draws us to is the interest and sort of the newness of these ideas and this new philosophy for understanding reliable systems and safety. I think you'll enjoy it, but I know you're going to enjoy Daniel's podcast. So listen carefully. Here's Daniel, and here we go.
All right. So my name is Daniel Hammerdahl. I work as a safety innovation leader. A lot of people ask me, what does a safety innovation leader do? And sort of half-jokingly, I tend to respond that I get paid to be unconventional around safety. If I do what anyone else is doing, I'm not doing my job. And that is sort of half true, but I'm informed by more things than just trying to be obnoxious and revolutionary. I have studied with Sidney Decker and Eric Holmnagel, and I'm heavily influenced by their ideas. So I see my role as being a bit of a bridge builder between new ideas and the daily practices of this organization. And
so how do you get that job? That's like the best job ever.
It is pretty cool, right? I was approached by the head of safety for this organization as if I wanted to come work with him, because he has as well studied with Sid. I guess he was looking for someone who could help him implement some of these ideas and turn them into practices.
So you didn't have to trick anybody. There's no blackmail involved. You didn't have photographs or anything. I mean, it was a legit straight up job.
I can't talk about that.
Crap. I already went there. Oh man. So what do you do? I mean, day in and day out, sort of describe your gig. I mean, what are you thinking? What are you doing? What changes are you making? What's going on?
Well, the way I see it is that I try to take care of pretty much the normal safety practices that we do have and change them and keep doing them, but we're using a different lens. So if we talk about safety awards recognition programs, okay, let's have a look at that and see what, you know, the assumptions that it's based on and critique it and then come up with an alternative. And that can be the same process can be applied to incident investigations, our job safety observations, safety audits, our engagement with the workforce. So a lot of what I do is trying to revamp our current practices. That's sort of 50% of what I do. And the other 50% is to, I go out to site and I run a workforce engagement program to really try to figure out where we can invest to prevent potential sensitivities of the systems that we have and make the systems better, stronger, set people up for success and really work on that positive side of safety.
So go back a moment, just if you will, to sure. the revamping part. They're both super interesting, but let's start with the revamping part. When you revamp something, what have you learned? What secret techniques have you developed to help revamp moving systems from sort of an old view to a new view that have really helped you be successful?
There is a number of recurring patterns in doing that. And one of them is to critique safety. Say, because they're all based on safety being a thing on its own, as if safety is something which is completely separate from work, that you can see safety and you can see work out there. So I try to bring safety back into work. So instead of focusing on safety, on risks, on hazards, and having that sort of language, which gives a very limited lens when you look at things, let's talk about work, because we see more and more of that. Incidents and accidents, they can come from all over the place. They don't have to come from things that we know about. So instead of talking about hazards, we can talk about when work is difficult. When do you feel challenged? When do you get frustrated? When is it that you don't have enough tools to deal with the demands? And try to tweak the perspective to be more interested in just work being done and learn from that. So I think that is the primary tweak that I'm trying to do to the daily practices that we have.
How do you do that?
I work a lot with the questions. Instead of having a list of these are the things that you look for, try to open up that and have open-ended questions that you need input from our frontline employees to be interested in what they do, what they experience, and what work is like for them. So have more of an exploration and trying to figure out what is actually going on rather than enforce what should be going on.
Wow, that's great. How do you collect data so that you can use it across the enterprise in sort of that open-ended environment you've made?
Yeah, well, there's we have a number of initiatives around that, and the more we manage to revamp the daily practices, the more we can, you know, the more data we get that will actually support that case. One initiative that we have is a method that we call ALPHA, which is an acronym, stands for Ask, Listen, Find Out, and Act. It describes the process steps. The ask and listen is the first stage where we sit down with our frontline employees, being the workforce supervisors and managers in our project. And we talk to them about their work. It's semi-structured focus groups. Normally it's me facilitating them, and it's been very successful. I ask questions like, you know, can you tell me about a situation when your work has been difficult? What are the conditions that it feels like you have to tolerate around here? If you could have $50,000, how would you invest them to improve this? And you use all these techniques to get people to share information about what work is like. And my job there is to just make sure that we get information about events that have occurred or conditions that are out there. So we, you know, it's not a whinge fest. It's not for people to just sit and vent for 90 minutes, but it's actually collecting information about concrete aspects that we can do something about.
And why do you see focus groups better than like a survey?
I think it's part of what I said earlier about enforcing what you think should happen or being open-minded and just trying to figure out what is actually happening. By having open question, you leave free to people for people to bring up what they struggle with, what is meaningful to them. If you use a survey, you risk just asking about what you're interested in, and you will miss all the other stuff that people are really, will potentially miss that, and what the people are struggling with, and what, where you can help out.
I can almost guarantee you'll miss it. So I think surveys are horrible interventions. How'd you get on this safety journey? What brought you into this? What made you interested?
My career started in aviation. I trained to become a commercial pilot, and I worked as a ground instructor in various flying schools, both in Sweden and in the US. And then I moved back to Sweden. I started working as a flight training inspector with the Swedish Civil Aviation Administration. And after a year or so, I transitioned into a role to start working as an accident investigator. It was pretty cool. But I was very soon frustrated with the levels of analysis that we were able to engage with in that accident investigation space. I became interested in, why do people behave in a certain way? How come I was very frustrated when our conclusion was that the accident happened because the pilot didn't pay attention or didn't see something or didn't follow procedure, whatever it was. So I tried to I wanted to go the next step. So why couldn't he see that? Why was he so focused on something else? And when we didn't have the capability to go beyond that. At that stage, I met up with Sidney Decker through various circumstances, and he showed this beautiful world of never-ending knowledge, of new perspectives, where you could use multiple perspectives to understand humans. And that really intrigued me, and I decided to go for a degree as psychologist. So I sort of abandoned the aviation career and went full speed ahead in psychology, which I finished in 2008. And then I thought about, should I go into clinical psychology and really try to figure out people, or maybe continue with this safety stuff that I've already got going for me. I decided to continue with safety, and I did some work together with Professor Eric Holnagel in France, and then I came over to Australia, where I started working in industry to put those ideas into practice. Yes, my career in 1 minute. It's obviously taken a bit more than 1 minute.
No, it was great. What advice would you give people who are starting this journey towards this, what do you call it, the never-ending joy of limitless information?
Yeah, I think it's just follow your passion is a bit of a placeholder, but there is you can be handed down the answers and be given a reference list with all the books you need to read about a certain topic, and that is, it's sort of a nice way to cover the basics. But there's so many perspectives out there, and there's so much literature, and if you have the opportunity, I would just encourage people to take the really pursue those perspectives that make them tick, that they find interesting, and just focus on that. You have no idea where it's going to carry you and what's going to be enable you to do eventually. So ask more questions than expect to be given the answers.
So that curiosity is really probably the most important tool you can have in kind of shifting paradigms from the old family to the new family, family one to family two?
Yes, I definitely agree with that. I think that if we look at the answers that have already been provided from the past and assume that they are going to take us into the future, I think we're missing a lot of the all the changes and how society is developing into something it hasn't been before. And I think curiosity is essential to embrace the great unknown, to embrace tomorrow. So yes, most certainly, curiosity is a fantastic thing to have, and that can be nurtured and encouraged and have a lot of fun with.
Daniel, that was a phenomenal way to say that. That was a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant statement.
Cool.
Talk to us about prevention. You're filled with many, I know. Talk to us about prevention. How are you using the New View to really prevent?
I have doubts if prevention is the way to talk about it anymore. I increasingly think that we will never know that if we prevent something or not. And especially if you start working on you know, more of the around performance variability, where you try to set people up for success, because if they're successful, they don't have failures. And you know, using that kind of logic, you will just have to work with, you know, what is difficult and make it easier for people to achieve what they're supposed to achieve, you know, reliably across varying conditions and all that. And if you capture something before it has even become a safety issue, you will never know if you prevented something. You have to look at the more positive indicators around, you know, are you improving performance? Is this a more productive place to work? Is it a more efficient place to work? Is it a nicer place to work even? I think prevention, if you start to move away from the traditional focus on just preventing negatives, you have to start thinking about prevention being something which is actually creating positives.
But that's a phenomenal shift. I mean, that notion, of course, there's an absence of a null set. We can't measure what didn't happen. Mm-hmm. But that shift from sort of the negative view of safety to the positive view of safety, or the negative view of reliability, the positive view of reliability, that shift is paramount. Mm-hmm. But it's a struggle. I mean, it's a struggle for industries all over the world to make that shift. How can we help them do that?
I think we need to change the definition around safety. And there's been a lot of work done in the resilience engineering space. And I think we can still do a little bit more work in making that language and vocabulary more accessible to people. Because
how would you define safety?
Well, I do define it as the capacity to be successful across varying conditions, which is very close to the whole model safety 2 definition. And that changes the question from preventing accidents and stopping failures from happening to asking questions around success. What is, you know, when is work difficult? But you can also learn from more positive events. And my experience is that operational managers are much more ready to embrace that idea, and they like that. They understand that safety can actually align with productivity. It's not a trade-off. It can be a trade-off, but not necessarily. Whereas safety people, safety managers, safety advisors, and all those professionally educated people are much more wedded to a traditional understanding of safety, where safety is the, you know, the freedom from risks or accidents.
Right, right. But what you're saying, I think, is remarkable in that the challenge is this positive view, this understanding of creating capacity, that challenges companies because there's such an absence, a profound absence of sort of positive performance indicators around system reliability. How do we challenge that?
No, I think I disagree with you. I don't think there is an absence. I just think that they have been disconnected from safety. So if you think that, you know, various sources of variability will make work difficult, for example, do you have your material on time when you need them? If they're not there, people will, you know, well, what do we use the people for today? Well, we can start over there and start shifting the plan around, and it becomes less predictable what's going to happen next, right? So what measures do you have for procurement in your business? And you can actually use that as some sort of lead indicator for safety and an indicator for a lot of other stuff. What's your retention rate? If you have a lot of turnover of people in a business, you're going to lose a lot of the organizational know-how. And if you have a sudden influx of newcomers into the business, you will have people who don't know where to find things, who don't know where to go on site, and you have increased stress on the project. You can actually start using HR indicators for safety. And I think it's just a matter of where, looking outside of safety to understand safety, if that makes sense.
Oh, I completely agree with you, except I'm finding, at least in my little discoveries, we're all going to organizations that really don't have any positive performance metrics around anything. In fact, they're so focused on work planning and work control, and then auditing to make sure the plan and control systems were used, you know, are the T's crossed, are the I's dotted, that things like kind of normal performance metrics that I think you'd look at for success aren't really measured. And I'm stunned by it. I mean, I'm just stunned by it, because the question isn't really a safety question. The question is how do you operate as an organization? And it's crazy, right? I mean, it's really interesting. part of the challenge, I think, and you're really in a great place to sort of have this conversation, is that the dialogue around sort of safe work or reliable work, we have to build sort of that bridge. I would suggest the only place where safety and operations are separate is in the boardroom or in the manager's office. It's certainly not safe at the sharp end of the stick where the worker is, or not separate at the sharp end of the stick where the worker is.
I agree. And I think if you look at the traditional attempts to control and guide businesses, such, for example, safety audits, be very much focused on, you know, compliance. Do we meet the standards of this best practice or whatever that is? So it's really enforcing one way of doing things. And it has driven this separation of safety from production. And I think that we can assess safety on its own, but it's also driven a separation, driven a gap between the people who have the resources to do something, to change things, and the people who have the most intimate understanding of the sensitivities.
But this notion that there is only one way to do things, the preferential treatment around work planning or job planning or work control, man, that's powerful. I mean, it's powerful.
It is powerful, but if you can show the things that we miss by having, you know, in pursuing the one best way of doing things, the biggest loss of having the one best way of pursuing a best practice, of having a standard, is that you render sort of half of your organization relatively voiceless. If you impose a certain way of thinking, and if it's a strict role of thinking around safety, then all the stuff that is in between, all the gray areas, all the complexities will disappear. They will go off the radar. They will have it happen underground, and you will never know about them. So if you can bring that into the discussion, and that are sort of good enough at the moment, but are they safe? Are they not? Well, we don't really know. They keep happening anyway. And there might be great innovations and things that are better than the best practice that is going on, but people can't talk about it because you're searching for the one best way.
Tell us about the web page you've started.
Yes. It was maybe 3 years ago now. I was working in a different company. And I had a colleague there, Zinta Satins, and she and I had all these amazing discussions. We were revamping on, you know, how can we think about safety and design in particular? How can we think about, you know, kept over lunch and coffee, we kept talking about this. And one day she told me that, Daniel, I think we should, you know, more people should be part of this conversation. More people need to hear about these ideas because it's great. And it's just, we should be sharing this. And I said, yes, how do we do that? You can do it in many different ways. We can have coffee with more people, but that would be a bit local. So she suggested, well, why don't you start a website? So I did. And in, I think it was November or December 2012, I created safetydifferently.com. And initially it was more for me. A few thoughts on there, more of a blog in sharing frustrations about current ways of doing things and also highlighting that there might be alternatives out there. But very soon, other people, colleagues, friends said, hey, can I also publish something there? I think now we have somewhere between 15 and 20 authors that have published their thoughts about what it means to do safety differently. And there's about 1,000 subscribers, email subscribers, 200, 300 people on Twitter and Facebook and so on. So it's a bit of a growing movement in that space. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
And, you know, it's not only the posts that are up there. They're, what I'm mostly proud of is that platform of when discussions start to happen following something that has been published. It's really great to see how people struggle and they're trying to make sense of different things and they point out the shortcomings of various perspectives. And I think that is what is needed to have those discussions, to figure out what it means to do safety differently and the benefits of that and the shortcomings of it. And also seeing that there's so many people out there who are frustrated with the current paradigm and they want to move beyond it. So it really helps people to connect and get inspiration and some encouragement, perhaps, in continuing to challenge old ways of doing things.
And I love the idea that it's building community. I mean, that this notion that the website can sort of create not only this venue for people to exchange ideas, but also this feeling of collective sort of understanding that there's a community of thought that's happening out there, and sort of the Thomas Kuhn notion of community of thought. I mean, that's really a powerful idea.
Yeah, I think that's the space I want to, you know, be even a bit more radical. At the moment, we have, as I said, 15 to 20 people who are sharing their ideas. But I do want to take the website to a place or a phase where it's even more open for their perspective, like having a safety Wikipedia where people can put up their, you know, what they know, how they understand safety too, what it means to have indicators for drift. They can experiment and share information in a way which is less of a blog and more collaborative.
And it's an open invitation, right? I mean, this is open to anybody. In fact, anyone listening can jump on, right?
Yeah. I just need to create the wiki now. But do join the website, sign up, and that the other stuff should happen very soon. It's really about creating a grassroots movement and making it a people's thing. I mean, we have people from all walks of life writing. We even have creative people. We've got academics, people outside of safety as well. We're starting to see some legal discussions, and I think we need to move into that space as well, given that the impact of the legal perspective on safety.
Oh, yeah, it's an important space at all. I mean, absolutely, absolutely. So what's next? What are you doing? What are you thinking about the future? What's interesting you now?
Yeah, there is a number of things. One of them is to just keep pouring fuel on the movement, if there is a movement. There is a movement. People start talking about that there is now people who do safety differently. And I want to help and enable people to both understand what that can mean and how it can be done without becoming prescriptive. And I think that is the biggest challenge. Once you start understanding and once you start having a set of practices, there is a substantial risk of that becoming a new norm, a new best practice, which would then not ruin the entire endeavor by constraining people again and saying, this is the problem. And here's some new ways to just start thinking about the low-hanging fruit that is out there in the big uncertainty of trying new things, of being creative. So that's from a generic point of view. But for that to happen, I think we just need more and more people with more and more perspective and start connecting them.
Are you starting to hear success stories?
Yeah, absolutely. It's not only from my own organization, but also from other people who say that the timing is just right, because so many people have been frustrated with the old ways of doing safety, of approaching safety, of thinking about safety. And once they've been given a language, a bit of a structure and an opening, how to think differently, they say, it's like trying to open a door that is already open. It's very welcoming, and more organizations are starting to develop their own practices around investigating success, investigating normal work, of having more appreciative inquiries. And when things go well, what is behind that? How can we enable people to do more of things that go well? Having more positive reportings than just incident reporting, without discarding the old ways, by the way, which is... I think critical to make the transition, that this is not threatening, that this is either or, you have to choose the new view or the old view. Transition, and once you feel comfortable with having a new view and see that those answers actually, they're more enabling and powerful, then you can, you know, gradually let go of the old way.
What did we miss? What should I have asked you that I failed to?
I think my passion is really about helping our workforce to share their views about work, about efficiencies, about safety, productivity, culture issues. When you sit down and you spend time and you're interested in hearing what they have to say, what they share, I think, is just brilliant. And it shows that we have so many people in our organization, pretty much everyone, I'd say, who are passionate about the project being successful, who are passionate about being successful and professional workers themselves. If we can start working with them instead of having this separation, you know, management and workers, which is, you know, maybe true from a sort of organizational structure point of view, but if we can get in the same boat and become more co-creative and co-generative in identifying the needs, identifying the solutions and providing the resources to do something about it, I think there is no limit to how good we can get.
Amazing. Thanks for your time, man.
It's been my pleasure.
Wow. What do you think? That's Dan Hammerdahl. I kind of think you're going to like it. I hope you can hear it. It took me a couple times. One is it's just not a really high quality recording, but the content outweighed the ability to throw it away and start again. Although Daniel wants to do another one, and I'm all for it. Daniel is the founder of the Safety Differently website, safetydifferently.com. It's worth your while just to take a little journey in there and look at it. To me, the takeaway is the ALPHA acronym: Ask, Listen, Find Out, and Act. It's really pushing us towards better operational learning. It absolutely gives a voice to the worker. It's right where we want to be as we move forward with the new view, with Safety Differently, with Family Too, with Human Performance, with High Reliability. Whatever you want to call it, it's all there, baby. So that's today's podcast. Thank you for listening. Always fun. If you have any questions or comments, got a couple good suggestions last week on podcasts to come. One of them is people want to start talking a little bit more about investigation protocols, and that's a good thing. I can't really teach you how to do investigations. I haven't figured that out yet. I haven't broken the code on that. But I can certainly talk to you about how to think about doing investigations, which dramatically improves the way investigations happen. And so that's what it's all about. Until then, this is the Pre-Accident Podcast. I'm so ding-dang glad you're listening. It's great. As always, learn something new every day. Have a ton of fun. And for goodness sakes, be safe. Okay, already. There's nothing after this part. See you later. Talk to you next week.